The West Live. The West Live with Ben O'Shea.
The West Australian senior journalist and columnist Kate Emery has covered countless stories since starting with the newspaper back in 2007. But while on maternity leave, she was writing something very different, her first novel. It's called The Not-So-Chosen One, and it's just been released. Kate is here with us now. Emery, how the heck are you?
I'm very good. It's a weird feeling being on the other side of the microphone talking about myself instead of interviewing someone, but I'll do my best not to just keep asking you the questions.
That's good. Otherwise, this is going to go nowhere. So, look, I think it's every journalist's dream to write a book. And I'm not just journalists. I think a lot of people out there in the community think, oh, you know, I've got one great book in me. But the reality is most of us do not. Turns out you do. How does it feel to be a published novelist?
It feels amazing, actually. It's still pretty surreal. I am one of those people who has always wanted to write a book, wrote a fantasy epic when I was like 14 on my parents' Amiga 500. Dad deleted it when he reformatted the C drive. So that was sort of my first experience with literary criticism. Didn't appreciate it. But look, it's actually been really fun. It's a completely different world. Writing about fiction, just being me in a room, not interacting with, you know, the editors, the sub-editors, not having it, the stories come out in the paper, but having it in a book is a completely different feeling, and it's great.
And so tell us about The Not-So-Chosen One. What is it about?
Look, the premise is Perth teenager who finds out on the same day that, number one, she's pregnant. Number two, oh, she's been accepted into this top secret magic school. So I've sort of described it to people as like a Perth Harry Potter. If Harry was kind of older and a girl and pregnant and like rubbish at magic as well, because things don't really turn out maybe how she'd hoped or maybe how you would hope if you, you know, got your ticket to Hogwarts, so to speak.
And so how did you come up with this concept?
I actually had an idea for it. Years and years ago, babysitting a family friend, he was having a tough time at school. He was reading Harry Potter. He said something like, oh, I really just wish that like I could live in this Harry Potter world. And I was trying to cheer him up. And so in my wisdom, I said something like, yeah, but imagine if, you know, you were in the world of Harry Potter and like it just wasn't how you thought it was going to be and you were crap at magic and things like that. Didn't cheer him up, but it did kind of give me the idea. And then, yeah, when I was on maternity leave, I finally had all this, well, free time, sort of, time while the baby was napping. And so I wrote it down and then it took it from there.
And so the idea of having the central character of the book to be a pregnant teen, I think is a really interesting way to get into this world of magic and kind of like a Harry Potter-esque universe. So unique. Why was that the way you decided to tackle it?
Well, without going into any spoilers, it is plot relevant.
Oh.
But it's also probably trying to sort of ground it in the real world. You know, not that many sort of pregnant teens in a lot of the
very
the
rare
fantasy
YA. The young adult lit. It's, you know, it's almost, I wouldn't say it's necessarily taboo, but it's probably the sort of thing that you don't immediately think of, right? Like if you're thinking of a book to give to like a young adult, that sort of, what were you talking about? Like sort of
probably like 14 plus.
Yeah, 14 plus, that sort of age group. There's a real value to that, right?
Well, I hope so. It did make me a bit nervous. It only came out, last week? And it was sort of coming out amidst all this Roe v. Wade stuff in the US. And naturally, you know, abortion in the book is sort of a talking point because she's sort of, you know, wondering about what to do. And I did wonder, is there going to be a big backlash from people who think, you know, teenagers shouldn't be talking about this kind of thing? Touch wood is probably because it's only out in Australia at the moment. And I think Australians are a lot more tolerant than a lot of people in the US. But it hasn't been a huge issue and I haven't been getting any angry emails from parents who've discovered what their kids are reading yet.
Well, can we fan a bit of controversy? It might boost sales, you know? Like American Psycho, have it like in a sealed plastic bag in the bookstore.
I definitely need more people abusing me on social media. So if you could make that happen, that would be amazing.
And so, you know, I love the idea that you kind of wrote this in the times when your baby was napping during your maternity leave. And I'm sure there was a lot more time spent on it writing the book. Like, how do you think being a journalist, and because the way you write as a journalist in a newspaper is very different to fiction in a book like this. So, but were there some aspects of your career as a journalist that you think helped in constructing the story, how you told it?
Definitely. I think the biggest advantage was probably just helping me to finish it, because as you would know, as a journo, you don't really have the luxury of sitting down and saying, I'm just going to wait for the muse to strike me and then flow through me. And until that happens, I'm not writing a word. It's like, you have to write this. It has to be by deadline, or there will be a blank page in the paper and you'll be fired. Yeah. So I think that helped with the mentality of like, get it done. You know, you can always make it better, but once it's done, at least you've got something. There's not going to be a blank page, so to speak. So that helped hugely.
Were there moments where you hit a bit of a creative brick wall?
Probably not writing. This will make writers feel sick, but probably it actually came really easy doing like first draft in maternity leave, because I was just having fun and just kept on writing. Then once I got the book contract, I actually had to chop a sizable portion of it down and make a few changes and do a rewrite. And I definitely found that harder. That sort of editing process, just because I wasn't really used to it. And I was like, what do you mean I have to get rid of 30,000 words? Every word is a gem. but it definitely made it a better book. So it was worth it in the end.
Yeah, it reminds me of this doco that I just saw yesterday about Leonard Cohen. And so I'm comparing you to him in terms of artistic creation.
I mean, you're not the first one,
yeah,
Ben,
course,
and I hope you won't
course.
Be the last.
But like hearing you say, oh, you know, writing this book was so easy, and other authors out there just being spewing. So he was talking to Bob Dylan one day about writing Hallelujah. And Bob Dylan said, oh, you know, such an amazing song. I've covered it myself on stage. How long did it take you to write that song? And Leonard Cohen, knowing that it had taken him 15 years, said it didn't want to be embarrassed in front of Bob Dylan. So said, oh, you know, like a couple of years. and Bob Dylan's like, oh, yeah, okay. And then Leonard Cohen said, oh, well, you know, how long did it take you, Bob, to write the, you know, the Hurricane? And Bob said, oh, I wrote it in 5 minutes in the back of a taxi.
Nice. It's like Dolly Parton writing, was it Jolene and Islands in the Stream in the same day?
Yeah,
and it's just, it's showing off is what it is.
Exactly. So I'm glad you're continuing that tradition of just sort of an artistic flex here on the show.
Leonard Cohen, Dolly Parton, Kate Emery, just contemporaries.
Wonderful, wonderful. And now also here at The West, one thing I want to talk about is you're also, as well as being a columnist on some very serious, weighty topics, and you've been a very serious journalist for a long time, you're also now our brunch reviewer.
Like, yeah,
how did you fall into that?
Oh, look, extreme greed, basically.
So someone just noticed, hang on a minute, she's always eating.
I did talk about breakfast and brunch. That's almost literally how it happened. A colleague here at the paper, I was always banging on about breakfast and brunch. I was an insufferable person who was like sharing photos on Instagram of my breakfast. We were sort of like looking around at the time, unbeknownst to me. And so, yeah, I got asked if I wanted to do it. Obviously, I would never turn down an opportunity to justify eating more food. And it's been really good. I think it's been two and a bit years now.
It's been so successful. People love it because it's, you know, as you well know, brunch is like probably the most important meal.
Greatest meal of the day.
Especially in Perth, right?
Yeah.
Like I would say people get more excited about going for brunch than they do going for dinner, much to the sort of upset of the hospitality industry.
Who's got the energy to go out after 7 o'clock at night?
I know.
Ridiculous.
I know. So do you have some favourite brunch spots?
I definitely do. I actually revisited an old favourite yesterday, North Perth sort of soul food cafe Satchmo,
yes.
Very beloved of many yep. Perth people. I was a little alarmed when I heard they were shutting their doors. I was less alarmed when I heard they were opening them about three shops up the road. So I went in yesterday.
Bigger? It's going to be bigger?
Yeah, bigger, but definitely the same kind of vibe. Yeah, kind of that New York soul food meets Seinfeld.
Yeah, matzo ball soup, bagels, yeah. All that vibe.
Still amazing. Just so good. And actually in the paper this weekend, something that may or may not interest you, different age kids really, my kids are a bit younger, a place out in Balcatta called Little Tees.
Oh, yeah.
When you go to a cafe and they've got like a full-on playground set up out the back, I often assume it's not going to be amazing. I'm there for the playground, not there for the food. But food and coffee were actually really great, and at no point did I have a small child on my lap or touching me during the whole meal.
And they make the food taste better.
Oh, so money can't buy that kind of pleasure.
I'm hearing you. All right, let's get back to the book, The Not So Chosen One. Where can people find it?
Pretty much anywhere you can find books. Obviously, I always pimp up the independent bookshops, but it is in the chains. It is online with your book depository, Booktopia. And someone told me the other day that it was in Big W. And frankly, that was really exciting. I actually got in my car, drove out to Big W just to check this was the case. And
confirmed?
It was there. Yes.
That's
so naturally,
amazing.
I just moved it around, made it a little more prominent. Apologies to all the workers of Big W and Karen Up who are just trying to get their job done.
That's actually amazing. The West senior journalist, Kate Emery, bloody book author. Congratulations on that. Thanks for joining us on The West Live.
Thanks for having me.
To have your say, or if you have a story, email the team at thewestlive@wanews.com.au.